Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure. Thanks for being part of my day. Don Boudreau is our guest this half hour, ladies and gentlemen. Don's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. We've known him we knew him a long time ago when he was with the Foundation for Economic Education, but he's done a lot of different things. Right now, he's doing something, though, that's pretty cool. He's the dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University, a very important job in his field on the planet. And he's also the author of a book that I'm very happy to have in front of me, Globalization. It's a very important topic that you've heard me talk about on the show many times before. And Don's here to talk to us about a number of things, including the recent increase in minimum wage. Don Boudreau, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be back, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Let's talk about this minimum wage thing. My audience knows, Don, that I believe basically that the government shouldn't be in the business of price fixing, which I think a minimum wage is price fixing.
I think that
an employer and employee should be able to negotiate their own wages. I don't have a huge problem, you know, from a reality standpoint, a practical standpoint, I should say, maybe pragmatic. I don't have a big problem if we want to have an entry level wage so that we make sure people don't pay people a quarter an hour. But this idea of the government mandating what some people call a living wage, I think is preposterous, and I think you probably agree with me.
I do. Look, wages in a market economy, and there's ample evidence to support this. You know, people just look around. Wages in a market economy are determined by worker productivity, and worker productivity is determined by how skilled and hardworking and experienced workers are. And you cannot make a worker worth $8 an hour simply by saying that worker's worth $8 an hour if the worker only produces $4 an hour. Mm-hmm. And so if you say that the worker has to be paid $8 an hour and the worker only produces $4 an hour or $7 an hour for the employer, that worker won't get hired. And so economists conclude, I think rightly, and there's a good deal of evidence to back it up, that minimum wage legislation causes unemployment among the very groups that it's designed to help, low-skilled, entry-level workers.
And explain how that happens.
Well, it's just what I said. If you walk into a supermarket, and let's say the government says, meat can be sold for anything less than $15 a pound, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, how many people are going to buy hamburger? None. Everybody's going to say that people buy meat, they're going to buy the top line cuts,
mm-hmm.
And so hamburger will go unsold. And so the 16 and 17 year old kid who's just entering the workforce, he or she has no experience, no job skills, and they're not very productive. So they may produce for a particular employer only $5 or $6 an hour. If the minimum wage is higher than that, the employer will look at the kid and say, "Well, okay, you can produce $6 an hour for me. I have to pay you $7 or $8 an hour. I'll lose $2 an hour for each hour that I hire you. You're not worth it. I'm either going to not pursue that, I'm not going to do that task, or I'll mechanize
By technology
to do it by technology." And
mm-hmm.
so people who would enter the workforce at those low wages, they don't get jobs. And by the way, so the same workers who without the minimum wage would have entered the workforce and gotten skilled so that they can earn higher wages because they have higher skills, they remain unemployed, they remain unskilled, and so the pool of unskilled workers expands over time. The minimum wage law is one of the most pernicious, low-skilled worker laws ever devised.
And the people who actually do raise a family, where the breadwinner is on minimum wage, those numbers are really very low from a percentage of as a percentage of those people who actually are on minimum wage, meaning people who are in multi-income families, teenagers, students, that kind of thing. And so instead of helping those people who are in that position with other types of aid, if the government wants to do that, they make this blanket minimum wage increase, which affects the entire economy. Stand by, sure. Don Boudreau. We're going to take a quick break. Don Boudreau is our guest. He and I are going to come back and talk about this and other issues that are affecting our small businesses. 2010, stay with us. Little Atlanta Rhythm Section, ARS. Welcome back. 17 Till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don Boudreau is our guest, Dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University, author of Globalization. Don, tell us where your book's available, please.
Well, it's available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Every now and then I see it in bookstores, you know, on the shelf, but mostly it's available online. I should say that the publisher set the high price. Its list price is $55, although now you can normally get it for about $44, which is a price I think is too high. I didn't set the price. I wish
it's because they're selling it as a textbook.
They're selling it as a textbook and as a book to go to libraries. But do let me say that I wrote the book, and I think I succeeded. It's written for people who know nothing about economics.
Exactly.
It's written to be very accessible.
There's no question about it, and I've certainly learned a lot from reading it, and of course we've all learned a lot from Don over the years. Don, by the way, give us the website there at George Mason.
Oh, it's just gmu dot edu and backslash economics.
If you want to get all the way into Doug's department, Doug, you called the minimum wage the most pernicious law.
Right.
But I think another thing that it does is it's the most dramatic example. Our Congress passing minimum wage, those who demanded that we have an increase in minimum wage, is the most dramatic example of how little our politicians understand about how the economy works. I mean, here we are. We're in we're in a worker deficit in the United States, don't you, Don? I mean, Bill Dunkelberg, our economist, our small business economist, who's on the show on a regular basis,
from Temple,
said,
right?
Yes, exactly, from Temple. Yeah. You know him well. He says that there may be as much as a million jobs going wanting in the United States. Now, if you've got that kind of a worker deficit in the United States, you don't need the government to raise the price of wages. That will happen on its own as a market force.
That's right. I mean, a lot of people say, well, if we don't have the minimum wage, wages will fall. That's ridiculous. My father, who went to sixth grade, he was not educated. He retired a few years ago. He worked all of his life in a shipyard. And he always earned wages above the minimum. And by the way, there was no union in his shipyard. He earned wages above the minimum because he had alternatives. If his employer didn't pay him what he was worth, he could have gone off and would have gone off to other work. Wages rise in a market economy because of competition among producers, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, large businesses. And all the minimum wage does is, frankly, artificially knocks out the bottom rung of the ladder for the workers who need that bottom rung the most.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take a small business who has low skill workers, people who are at the minimum wage or near the minimum wage, and they've got their business established, and they have their pricing structure. They have their customers coming in. They're expecting to pay a certain price. They know what things are worth. They're paying a certain price. And so this small business has got everything established the way they want it. They've got the workers in there doing what they need to be doing and apparently happy to be working there and making this wage, or they could go somewhere else. So he's got all this, and he's trying to make a living. And then overnight, ladies and gentlemen, his one element of his expense goes up 20%, let's say 15%, whatever the raise was. Overnight, he didn't have one new customer. He didn't make one extra nickel of gross profit. Nothing changed. Nothing improved in his business. Productivity didn't go up. But because by government fiat, his expenses went up and his profits went down overnight. There's something horribly wrong about that.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. And you know, there are lots of different ways in practice for employers, as your listeners know, to respond to minimum wage. One is, you know, and I think this happens, is simply not to hire workers who you might otherwise hire. Another way is you can work your employers harder, and so they may not lose their jobs, but they're being worked harder. Another way is to cut back on fringe benefits. So the employer who might otherwise, you know, pay a certain amount into a health plan or a retirement plan, those kind of contributions will decline. And so they're all but in all of those responses, the workers lose.
Don, I think that this next election is going to be the most momentous election, the most important election of my lifetime. What do you think?
I think it's big. A lifetime's a long time, Jim.
So far, anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say I'm not crazy about either of the candidates, but some of the stuff coming out of, especially the Obama camp on economics, is just silly. You know, Obama has this energy rebate plan where he's going to tax the windfall profits of oil companies, and I don't even think the guys bothered to look at the actual profits that U.S. oil companies earn. There aren't. Mm-hmm. You could take them all, not just windfall part, whatever you define in windfall part. You could take them all, and there's not enough money to give $1,000 to every American household.
Well, not only that, but talk about confiscation and redistribution of wealth.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the more important. That's the more important point. Why aren't oil companies entitled to their profits? That's why they're in business, to make profits. And Barack Obama and his advisors may think that they can determine what right profits are, but no one can.
Yeah. Stand by, Don. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to get Don to look into the Boudreaux crystal ball and tell us what he thinks about the upcoming economy over the next year, 2-3 years. And we'll do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingham. Stay with us.
Turn around and see you in a crowded place. What's good the emotions on a god face?
Little Joe Cocker bringing us back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingham, the Small Business Advocate. Don Boudreaux is our guest. He's the dean of the School of Economics at George Mason University, the author of Globalization, a book I highly recommend to you. You can get it wherever books are sold. Globalization. Don't be concerned that it's designed to sort of, the architecture is sort of like a textbook, folks. It looks more like a textbook than say the typical kind of books you see in a bookstore. But don't worry about that. It's what's inside is very important stuff, and it doesn't read like a textbook. It reads like something that you could benefit from, and I have benefited from it. Don, what is your overall attitude about the economy going forward?
I remain a long term optimist. But in the short term, say the next 1 to 3 years, I don't think I've ever been as pessimistic in my adult life as I am now. I don't think there'll be anything. People talk about there being, you know, a return to the Great Depression of the 1930s. I doubt that seriously. I don't see that happening.
But Bob McTeer, former Fed member and president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas on this show. He's a regular guest, but a week or so ago, he didn't say that we were going to go, we were going to wind up like the Great Depression, but he said that this was the worst financial crisis that we've been in since the Great Depression.
Yeah, that might be, but you know, one of the benefits of, I mean, a couple of things happened in the Great Depression that's not happening now. At the time, there was a widespread belief that socialism was the way to go. We don't appreciate that now. There isn't that now. And so investors aren't being scared away today as they were scared away 70 years ago. And the second thing is the economy, both the U.S. economy and the world economy, which the U.S. economy is a part, is so much bigger. And that means it can absorb a lot more ill treatment than it could absorb back in the 1930s. I'm not saying it's good, and I do think there are problems that have to be addressed. And I suspect that over the next 1, 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, you know, there'll be some really heavy bumps in the road that a lot of people who are adults now don't ever remember encountering. But I don't see it, number one, being anywhere near as deep as the Great Depression of the 1930s, and I don't see it turning into a major, lasting, you know, 20, 30-year, long-term decline. I think that my 11-year-old son, when he's, say, you know, starting his family, I think the world will be wealthier than it is now and still thriving.
Isn't that because of globalization? Isn't that going to – aren't you optimistic because of globalization, which includes our ability to communicate and move information around quicker?
Yes, that is a big part of it. It's not the only thing, but that is a big part, perhaps the single biggest part.
We didn't have that information, transfer of information, in, you know, 70 years ago. By the way, back to your point about socialism, in the 1930s, there were probably less than 20 democracies in the world. Today, there are over 120.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, but you mentioned Bob McTeer. I mean, one of the great influences on me is the research that was done at the Dallas Fed during Bob's tenure as president there.
Right. And Michael Cox was his economist.
Right. Mike Cox, who's still there, Mike Cox finds, I find this very persuasive, he finds that the length of economic downturns over the years since the 1930s gets shorter and shorter. And I think it's because economies have become bigger and become better able to adjust.
Well, look at the recessions that we've had.
That's right.
I mean, I was involved in the recessions of the 70s, actually the last one in the late 60s, and they've all gotten easier because of our ability to move information around and our ability to manage information, which includes information about inventories.
That's right.
Just-in-time inventory practice, in my opinion, Don, is one of the most significant things to fight any kind of recessions that we've ever come up with.
It's a major advance. It really is. And then the other management and production changes that work in the same good direction.
But Don, as optimistic as we are about the fundamentals, about the mechanics and all that, there's one ringer in all this that could turn it the other way, and that's politicians.
That's right. In fact,
Look what's happening with Russia and Georgia right now. I mean, that's another example. We still live in a dangerous world. Danger, and the danger comes from politicians.
The danger comes from politicians and how they. I always say I worry much less about economic fundamentals. I worry much less about how the economy will react than I worry about how politicians will react to the economy.
Exactly. Well said, and a good last thought. Hey, Don, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Always my pleasure, Jim.
Don Boudreau, ladies and gentlemen, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and he'll be back another day. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you. I'll be back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.